Couch Potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Kristen Dreyer Kramer, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies.
We have a busy show this week, and we're going to have a busy show for the next couple weeks, because holy cow, we've got so
many
movies.
Award season.
Tons of movies coming out, and I don't know if it's just me, there seems to be more movies coming out in the regular theaters, not just award season as well.
Yeah, it's crazy this time of year right now.
It's insane. We were looking at the schedule over, like, we're going to be covering 6,000 movies between now.
Approximately.
Yeah, between now and January.
Slightly more than that.
Anyways, the movies we're going to be talking about this week are is this little movie, you may have heard of it, called The Hunger Games, Catching Fire.
I think I've heard of that.
Yeah. Delivery Man, The Christmas Candle, which you may not have heard of, and Kill Your Darlings, which you also may not have heard of. We also have some listener feedback that's not from Red State Gabe. No, we have some news. We have some DVDs and Blu-rays to talk about. Before we get into that, let's talk about how to get a hold of us. You can reach us at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can find us on fatguysatthemovies.com on the internet, on the web, on the worldwide web, www.fatguysatthemovies.com. Voicemail, if you want to leave us a voicemail and give us your
call
thoughts.
Call us so we can crush your dreams.
In your beautiful, dulcet tones of an angel. 740-205-6456. You can call us at 740-205-6456. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/FGATM. And you can find me on Twitter at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
And I'm Katie K. Reviews.
All right. Before we get started, you're going to hear a little bit of what Jennifer Lawrence has to say about Hunger Games, Catching Fire. So just to tease and whet your appetite for that in case you're hungry for it.
Nice.
Catching Fire is definitely, it's bigger on a lot of levels because the capital has to go to kind of extreme measures. The first games was all about entertainment and all about television. Now there's a lot going on behind the scenes where President Snow doesn't really care who lives at this point. So the stakes are much higher.
So there you go. We'll be talking about that in the next segment. But first, as you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr and Kristen Dreyer Kramer, let's leap into the news.
Leap.
And we have news that covers like all the stuff, all our favorite things we like to talk about. One of them being James Bond. This is one that's sort of I find this very interesting. I know you like the recent James Bond movies. Have you seen all the old ones too?
Not all of them, but most of them, yeah.
Yeah. Apparently, there has finally been a settlement between Aeon Productions, which does all the James Bond movies, and the estate of Kevin McClory, who created the character of Blofeld and Spectre and wrote Thunderball.
Right.
And that has finally been resolved. Which means that Blofeld
could
actually return as a villain. Or I guess they'd reintroduce him since we're...
Right, because we're going back now and we're jumping back to the beginning of the whole thing. It's very confusing.
We rebooted.
But it could happen.
If you don't know the history of it, the way it worked out is Kevin McClory was hired to write a James Bond adaptation when they first started to do it. And he wrote Thunderball and he created the organization Spectre, which is a big terrorist organization. And Ernst Stavel Blofeld, who leads it. That's the guy with the cat.
Right.
Who's been played by everyone from Max von Sydow to Telly Savalas. I mean, it's bizarre.
Yes.
It's weird.
Donald and Mike Myers.
Mike Myers, yes. He's what Mike Myers is making fun of. And then there was falling out, and they actually then did Dr. No first, and they did Thunderball as the third movie, and then there was a big suit because he said he wanted to do his own James Bond movies, and he basically... Kevin McClory.
And wasn't he kind of cut out of Thunderball in the end, too? And
yeah, you know, he wrote this. He was there. He was a producer. Mm-hmm. But what they did is they said, you don't have the rights to the James Bond franchise. You just have the rights to whatever you created in this movie.
Right. It was a big legal mess.
And he remade it as Never Say Never Again. And he actually got the rights to do a TV series on it.
Nice.
But they basically said you could only remake Thunderball, which would have meant the same... It would have been either like a series all about Thunderball, just taking the entire series to talk about.
That would have been a challenge.
Which would have been bizarre. So yeah, he was fighting for years, and he died several years ago. So they finally settled their difference, buried the hatchet, and now money will prevail, and Blofeld will likely return.
So when the next Bond movie comes out in 2015...
Who's going to play Blofeld? I want to know who plays him. That's what I'm excited about.
Okay.
I think they should do something like Chai McBride... Just to throw everybody off, because he's bald.
Yeah.
He's bald at times.
He is, yeah.
Except in like movies like The Frighteners when he had a big afro.
Well, there's that.
So, So that's an interesting news story. The other one in sequel territory.
Yes.
It's the news.
Big news of the week.
What I like to refer to as it's a terrible sequel.
Yes.
There was announced that some independent group is planning to make a sequel to It's a Wonderful Life, the beloved Christmas classic starring Jimmy Stewart.
From the 1940s.
Exactly.
You know, because it really has been overdue for a sequel for many, many decades.
And you'd think it wrapped up. Because there you go. It's a Wonderful Life. We're
because
done.
For, you know, so many years, people have been wondering, well, what happens next?
When do the ninjas and the communists attack?
The ninjas, even.
Ninja communist Nazis.
Merry Christmas.
They're going to call it It's a Wonderful Life, like the rest of the story or something like that. I guess Paul Harvey.
And it's supposed to take place, you know, into the future with, like, his grandson, who is also George. And,
They have the woman who originally played Zuzu from Zuzu's Petals.
Yeah.
She's still alive. She's about it. That's the
only one.
I mean, Donna Reed and Jimmy Stewart are long gone. But they're going to have her play an angel.
Right.
And what's the greatest tag to this story, which Kristen found.
Yeah, that's the next thing. The next article was Paramount comes along and says, not so fast. We own the rights to this story and you can't have it.
Yeah. So it's sort of like you hear that record scratch.
Yeah.
The music stops playing.
Which, hey, good. You know, get in there, Paramount, and crush these people's dreams.
I find it amazing that we have a major studio that's like, no, we will not make a sequel. You've never heard that happen ever. It's usually
it's
directors, you know.
That's true.
I mean, I'm sure Universal's like, we'd love to do an E.T. sequel. If only we could wrestle that right away from Steven Spielberg.
Yes.
Maybe they could have E.T., It's a Wonderful Extraterrestrial Life, and they can have a co-production with Paramount and Universal.
Mm.
And then you could get, like, you know, Steven Spielberg's insane nephew to direct it.
Now Spielberg's. You're just being silly.
All right, so that's an interesting news. That, and on another bait and switch news.
Yes.
Apparently there was a story that broke last week that Adam Driver, who, if you don't know who he is the ugliest man in America. He plays on Girls.
Yeah. I haven't seen Girls, but I've seen a picture of him, and you're pretty accurate in
that. He is weird looking.
He looks like very strange looking.
He's like a lollipop. He's very tall and skinny. He has this giant head. And he was rumored to play Nightwing, which is the grown-up version of Robin.
Right.
I still think I should play Robin in the next Batman movie. And I want to wear, like, the little green panties and the red shirt. And
I'm going to be having nightmares about that for weeks.
I want him to do that sometime. I think I should dress up as Robin and just go down to the municipal center and say, I'm here to fight crime.
Nice.
Can I get a sandwich?
A sandwich.
But yeah, so
you guys got any milk?
Yeah, I need a donut. But yeah, so Adam Driver has been rumored, but then he came out and he's like, no, this is nonsense. I'm not playing Nightwing. So there's another thing that's not happening, at least right now.
But
things that are happening.
Yes.
Speaking of Batman, there is just recently, I mean, very recently, somebody uncovered that Warner Brothers has registered several names into trademark for the potential sequel.
Which is, it's so interesting that someone is so obsessive that they're like checking with the trademark bureaus.
Yeah. And
that, you need another hobby.
This is amazing. Well, and I think part of the reason they're doing it is not just that they're really kind of floating the names. I think they might be trying to sort of circumvent, you know, something like The Asylum from making the fake movie, because Man of Steel is not Superman. The Dark Knight's not Batman.
Right.
Batman and Superman are trademark names. So I think they're trying to cover their bases on this. Here are some of the names that are listed. They all start with Man of Steel. So I'll just give you the subtitles. There's Battle the Knight with a K.
Nice, yeah.
If it starred Nicolas Cage, it'd be awesome.
Mm.
Man of Steel Beyond Darkness. Also, potential sequel to Star Trek. Man of Steel, here you go, Black of Night.
Well, with a K?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Starring Martin Lawrence.
Yeah.
Man of Steel, Darkness Falls. Haven't we had like six movies called Darkness Falls already?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. There's Man of Steel, Night Falls with a K.
Of course.
Of course.
Now we're just getting classy with a K.
Now here you go, Man of Steel, Shadow of the Night with an N.
Oh.
Amazing.
And then
Man of Steel,
: The Night Returns.
The Night Returns, yes. Man of Steel, The Blackest Hour. And then Man of Steel, The Darkness Within. These are terrible titles.
They're horrible.
But, you know, maybe they'll make them.
Oh,
anyways,
dear.
That's it for news. Those are fun items.
2015, we're gonna be ladies and about, gentlemen.
Yes. Christmas Candle, Kill Your Darlings, and Hunger Games coming up next. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kristen Grier, Kramer, and Kevin Carr.
Hello!
Starring in The Man of Steel, Nightness Falls.
Nightness Falls.
Fat Nightness Falls.
Mm, that's good.
The
I like
Fat
that.
Of Night.
Ooh.
That's what they should call it.
Oh, yeah, I like that one.
Fat Man versus Superman.
Yeah. Listen world's up, finest. Warner Brothers.
World's fattest. All right. This week, let's move on. I know it's before Thanksgiving. There is a Christmas movie to talk about. That's a problem. Not only is there
Christmas movie last week, we talked about the Best Man Holiday, which getting a sequel.
Of course it's getting a sequel. It made $800 million.
And, you know, it could Bitcoins. Be coming out before 14 years from now.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
I would imagine. Taye Diggs is going to be like a walk. He's going, I'm going to be. I still got a great body.
You know, Morris Chestnut, he's still playing football, and he's well in his 40s. So, you know.
He's in professional wrestling. They've gone downhill. All right, let's talk about The Christmas Candle. This is a smaller release, but it's hitting about 400 theaters nationwide. Figured it was worth talking about. A small town in possession of a magical candle, if we all had one of those, that grants wishes every Christmas must deal with the possibility that their most cherished item has been lost.
Welcome to Gladbury, home of the Christmas candle.
Forgive my ignorance, but what is this Christmas candle?
The Christmas candle's no different than old wives' tales or your Bible stories.
Miracle is in this basket, and we won't let it go to waste.
I'm praying for a husband.
All their hopes wrapped up in one candle.
It's high time that Gladbury see the light.
You may have one candle to give, but I hope to give everyone a little light this Christmas.
Electricity in the church. Now this I have to see.
I've given up on this movie already. Just from that. Like, oh.
Here's the thing. It's,
Is it starring Charlie Brown?
Because
if it stars Charlie Brown, then I would watch it.
It stars Samantha Banks is the only recognizable name I really see in it. She was the not prostitute in Les Miserables from last year.
Yes.
The very attractive dark-haired girl.
Right.
I don't know what she was. She was like, then she like turned into a boy. It was like suddenly it yentled.
She turned into a boy.
Well, I mean, she didn't turn into a boy, but she like dressed like a boy.
Well, yeah, so she could fight in the revolution.
Yeah.
Right.
The whole yentled thing again.
She was very good.
Ripped off Barbara Streisand big time. Anyway, I kind of got off track there. Anyways, A Christmas Candle.
Christmas Candle.
This is the first theatrical release from Echolight Pictures. Mm-hmm. Most notable because that's the film company that Rick Santorum, after his failed presidential bid, became head of.
And why not?
Which that always sort of confused me. You know,
confused is a good word.
Not making any sort of political statement about Rick Santorum, but just I mean politics to movies.
That's why not?
A bit of a
Some
leap.
People go from movies to politics, so why not do it the other way around?
I mean, Chris Dodd did that, didn't he? Because Chris Dodd was like a senator.
There you go.
A big it's Democratic true. Senator, yeah. And then became a head of the MPAA and suddenly wants to take away all privacy rights. So these things happen. So anyways, this movie is a very typical faith-based movie. It's from a faith-based studio. And I sometimes get a little hard on faith-based movies because their production value is kind of low.
Right.
If you've seen Fireproof with Kirk Cameron, you know what I'm talking about. Because that movie was terrible.
Yeah.
And it was ridiculous and stupid. And Kirk Cameron, I'm sure, is a nice guy. But holy cow. But this movie, I mean, it worked. This would have been perfectly fine as a Hallmark movie.
Right.
I mean, it actually, the production value looks better than some of these smaller budgeted films I've seen.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as pervasively corny is the best way to describe it.
Well, that's nice.
Stuff happens in the movie. It gets extremely dark in the middle, like Tyler Perry, crazy dark, like Best Man Holiday. Gets like Best Man Holiday dark in the middle.
Hmm.
And it comes out of it. But yeah, it's a perfectly fine movie to watch with your mom or your grandmother. It seems a little out of place in a theatrical release simply because it just feels so TV movie-ish.
Yeah.
But that's okay. You know, hey, you know, if you don't want to see people killing each other in the movies this year or movies about, you know, donations at a fertility clinic.
It sounds like something that's good for
your option.
Thanksgiving weekend to take with your family, because you're spending time with your family anyway, and after you get sick of talking to them, take your mom to the movie.
Exactly.
Yes.
So there's that. I'm going to say I thought it kind of sucked, but it kind of rocks. It's worth seeing if you like this sort of thing.
It is what it is.
Yes. You're listening to Fat Guys in the Movies with Kevin Carr and Kristen Dreyer Kramer. Next movie is...
Yes. Next up, we have Kill Your Darlings. Daniel Radcliffe stars as Allen Ginsberg in this story about the Beat Generation's college days and the murder that changed their lives forever.
Like, we've all been through that.
I know.
Rhyme, meter, conceit. Without this balance, a poem becomes slack.
Then how do you explain Whitman? Well, he hated rhyme and meter.
What's your name?
Allen Ginsberg.
Tear them up, boys. Destroy the old and build the new.
Illiteracy. A literary revolution without writing a word. Meet Triclu.
He is a professor who won't let me go.
Then let's get rid of him.
College is rough, man.
If I had a nickel for every person I murdered in college.
I know. Oops. And my friends, too, man.
And it's Dexter he murdered. That's the best part.
Dexter.
I know. Morgan.
Which, yeah, was a little bit ironic. Like, really? Dexter even?
Yeah.
Yeah. I love the beginning of this movie.
Okay.
I love when all of these characters that you've read about and you've read their work, they all come together, and it's just this new movement for, you know, literary history.
Yeah.
And, you know, you meet all these characters, and they're having fun. It's like a 1940s college party movie.
It's Porky's for the 40s.
It is. You know, they're all going out, and they're going to the clubs, and they're listening to their jazz music. And,
Revenge of the
you know,
Beat.
Yeah. And it's really well done for, you know, the Beat Poets and their youth and exuberance and the poetry, and it's beautiful. And then it hits a brick wall.
Then Harry Potter comes out a couple times.
Harry Potter comes out. That sounds like a terrible thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it just all of a sudden it just gets really dark. And all of the fun
Best man,
and
holiday
excitement kind of maybe even more. So yeah, all of a sudden, all of the energy and the life and the fun of this movie, just it goes downhill.
Yeah.
And everybody gets upset and angry and they do bad things and it kind of falls apart.
Yeah. Here's the thing. I come from a slightly different perspective because, I mean, you have a much more literary background than I do. And
a little bit, yeah.
I'm not a big poetry fan just to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
Just put that out there. I really haven't read Ginsberg. I haven't read Kerouac. I haven't read Burroughs. So I'm aware of who they are.
I think I have a few books on my shelf if you'd like to borrow them.
Yeah, sure. I'll get right to that. So I don't come from that perspective of it does really romanticize that the genesis of the Beat Generation.
Mm-hmm.
It really romanticizes that. And I rolled my eyes a bit at that because it was just – it's very heavy-handed. Now, if you love if you love that genre and you love that era of poetry, it's something that
– It's not even necessarily just the specifics of these writers. It's just the energy of what they're trying to do.
It's a very –
And they're going in and they're trying to do something different. And, you know, they're taking these things that have worked for poets and writers for – generations and generations and generations and saying, look, we don't need to do that anymore.
I found Howl to be a much more interesting movie from Ginsberg's
perspective. Of course you would.
Because that one was just wacky.
Yes.
But there's it does kind of not – you're right in the sense that if you can get past that opening, say, the opening half where it really kind of – it puts all that energy and it romanticizes that, the last half does get kind of go off the rails a bit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to say it. Kind of sucks.
I'm still going to say it kind of rocks, but just barely.
Just barely?
Yeah.
Just escapes it out of that beginning.
Yeah.
So, well, there you go. Kill Your Darlings. See Harry Potter in compromising positions.
Yes.
And we've got to go to a break. When we come back, Hunger Games and Delivery Man.
Shake that.
And welcome back to Bad Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr and Kristen Dreyer Kramer. So we've got a little movie to talk about, one that, you know, a few people are going to catch this weekend, I think.
Yeah, a couple.
One or two they're going to see. It is called The Hunger Games: Catching Fire.
They made a sequel?
They did!
Whoa!
I know! And in this sequel, as they set out on their victor's tour of Pan Am, Katniss and Peeta find themselves under pressure to maintain order in the downtrodden districts.
This is the 75th year of the Hunger Games. The tributes are to be reaped from the existing pool of victors.
I get to say goodbye.
So what do we do?
I think these games are going to be different.
The 75th Hunger Games!
That's like just the first half. That's like the first 40 minutes.
Well, yeah. Well, I'm not going to go into all of the 2 hours.
Then there's another Hunger Games.
2.5 hours because, you know, I don't want to give anything away if you haven't read the book.
Well, or seen the trailer.
I'm not going to, you know, spoil it.
What'd you think?
I really enjoyed it.
Okay.
I did. You know, in the beginning, it has, you know, the tour, and it's really emotional, and they have to go back and see, you know, all of the people who they fought with in the Hunger Games the first time, the people that they bonded with, and they have to see their families, and it's really, you know, you kind of get a little choked up.
Yeah.
I did, because I'm a girl. You probably didn't, because you're a guy.
No, I didn't get choked up.
No.
I wanted him to go to, like, District 1 and go, yeah, I killed that guy!
Yeah.
That guy!
Yeah.
Who's, like, twice as big as me.
We didn't see that part.
Yeah.
Where they go to, you
they
know,
go to District
those
11.
Districts.
They're like, those poor kids.
Yes. So. But, yeah, and then as the story builds, you find out more about what's going on behind the scenes and with President Snow, who Donald Sutherland is so wonderfully creepy.
I love him.
How great is this guy?
He's awesome.
Yes. And then the emotion builds into more action. Yeah. And it's gorgeous. We saw it in IMAX, and it is absolutely beautiful.
I'm going to warn you, though. The movie opens with a helicopter shot of pine trees on a mountain. And I took my wife to the screening. And I say to her, I go, oh, God, I thought it was a Twilight movie.
No, that's true.
Because it was like Lionsgate. I'm like, uh-oh. Oh, no.
Mm-hmm.
But no, it wasn't. Here's the thing. I thought once the Hunger Gaming started, it had me.
Yeah.
It really, and I thought it was really, really good. When it comes to these movies, I kind of like the... I like the social commentary, I like the political commentary, the stuff that's kind of going on behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
I like the irony of the fact that it's a movie about distracting the public.
Right.
And it just, the movie distracts the public from everything else that's going on. It becomes the news story itself,
just like
what happens in the movie. The first 40 minutes or so, there are some parts I enjoyed in it. It's just they... And this is a necessary evil of the process, but it really just hits you over the head. It's like, we have a love triangle. Gail, who you see like for 5 minutes in the first movie and disappears, he's important. You know?
Well, there's a lot more of it in the book. And,
oh, I'm sure.
You know, that is one of those things that somebody mentioned to me afterwards. They're like, you know, the thing that I really love about this is that there's a love triangle, but we don't really care about it that much. And it's not all Edward and Jacob all the time. And it's just kind of in the background. It's there, but whatever.
Well,
it's not really the main part of the story.
A lot of people compare it to Twilight. I think that's unfair.
Yeah.
It has that love triangle because if you say, what's Twilight about? You go, it's the werewolf vampire love story. Boom.
Right.
That's what it's about. Say, what's Hunger Games? That's going to be like the fourth or fifth thing you mention.
Exactly.
Sort of the relationships. It's political and social commentary. It's an action movie and it's a female empowerment film.
And all of this stuff comes out more in the third book too.
Yeah.
So there's that. Yeah. And for me, that is the one... biggest weakness of this film is that you have to adapt this pretty big book that has a lot going on. There are all kinds of things going on behind the scenes and under everything else, and you can't cover it all in the movie. And there are little things that it touches on here and there, and if you've read the book, you understand the significance of it. But if you haven't read the book, you're like, all right, whatever.
I didn't feel like anything was missing. And my wife said it was pretty close to the book. Obviously,
yeah.
They take stuff out.
Mm-hmm.
But I enjoyed it. The only thing is, here's why I can forgive the whole faking a relationship for the press, is because that's exactly what they did with Twilight. They, like, take these two characters, these two people who put together in a movie, and they play this romance, and then they kind of... push them together behind the scenes, and then the Robert Pattinson Kristen Stewart relationship became the story itself, which I like to think, I think this is, I'm giving too much credit to the movie, but that seems to be what this is sort of angling at, as well as going, well, you know, we're just manufacturing a relationship at times. And I think it's unclear back and forth, but like I said, once it gets to the Hunger Gaming.
I think it makes a great companion to the book.
Yes.
That's what I would say.
That's a good way of saying it. Mm-hmm. It is a little bit, I'm going to warn you, and I'm not, no spoilers, but it does lead into the next book, so.
Yes.
Don't expect the giant battle of Yavin at the end of this.
Yeah. No, it just kind of stops.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Yeah. But it's that's the way it is. Mm-hmm. So
it is exactly like the book.
It worked for me. I enjoyed it. I'm giving it a rocks.
I'm going to say it rocks too.
Yay. All right. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr and Kristen Dreyer Kramer. We're going to move on to the other big wide release this weekend. And that is Delivery Man. Vince Vaughn plays a wayward middle-aged man who suddenly discovers that he has 533 children from his sperm bank donations in the 90s.
Go figure.
Who has this not happened?
I know. College.
David Wozniak. In 1994, you donated to a fertility clinic anonymously. Apparently, there was a mix-up at the clinic.
What?
You are the biological father of 533 children.
What?
How would a normal person handle a situation like this?
A normal person would not be in this situation.
We're in trouble, David. Your kids are suing to find out who their biological father is.
What do we do now?
This envelope contains the profiles of your children. Do not open it.
So, you didn't get a chance to see it because we had conflicting screenings, correct?
Right, yeah. And I ended up seeing something that we're going to talk about next week.
So amazing.
Yes. Best picture.
All right. It's actually based on a French-Canadian film called Starbuck.
Right.
Did you see that one?
I didn't, but it actually came out in the States earlier this year.
Yeah.
So, you know, in case you missed it, which most of you probably did, here's the Vince Vaughn version.
This is the one with English.
And Vince Vaughn.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
This movie is being billed as that Vince Vaughn comedy. It definitely has its scenes of him doing his thing, his fast-talking craziness.
Yeah.
That sometimes works in movies like Swingers.
Yeah.
And sometimes...
Swingers was a long time ago.
Sometimes doesn't work in movies like...
Swingers was when this guy was making his donations to the sperm bank.
Oh, yeah. There you go. He was a real swinger. I did do the math on this, and they're like, what? How many times? And I'm like, that's not unrealistic. To think, although, you know, at least he was making money doing it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I'd be a millionaire by now. Holy cow.
Okay.
Anywho.
Moving right along, let's talk about the movie.
The movie, it has a surprising amount of heart to it, which surprised me because it was a surprising amount. But
it's true.
I was not expecting it to be as just sort of like a nice little story because it doesn't try to be this raucous comedy throughout. It balances itself, and while it's not perfect,
which I think that comes from the original, and this was directed by the same director as the original. I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
Okay. I didn't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, I think it actually works that way, and it ignores giant aspects of what would really happen, because you know the whole premise is that even though he had 533. He sired 533 kids. There's like a group of like 150 that are suing to get his information released. And it shows him trying to connect with each one undercover kind of thing. But here's the thing. There is no mention at all of the mothers that chose to use the artificial insemination.
Interesting.
Out of 100 and some, you would have thought that would work in somewhere. Or the fact that there was maybe a couple, a father and mother, who couldn't conceive and the guy shooting blanks, so they have to go to the fertility clinic. It just, there is no other like real parent, quote unquote, real parents involved in this. And it seems a little odd that they don't address it, but it would have made a much more complicated film.
Well, yeah, but you would think that there are parents involved here somewhere.
Yeah. They carve a lot of that out, I think, for simplicity's sake.
Yeah.
And if you can just kind of put the blinders on, it works. It's a fine little movie. And Chris Pratt plays the lawyer, and and that's sort of Mickey Moused around. But overall, it's a sweet little. It's the kind of movie you could actually like watch with your mom once you get past the whole donation process.
Right.
Jokes. Anyways, I'm gonna say it kind of rocks.
All right.
We gotta go to break. When we come back, box office and DVD.
We'll be right back.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kristen Dreyer Kramer and Kevin Carr. This week, we are not going to crush someone's dreams.
No.
We have another listener email.
We're going to tell stories.
Yes, today we're telling stories.
This is from, not from Red State Gabe or Thomas from Seattle. This is Chris from Kansas City.
Yay, hi Chris.
Or at least he wrote Chris from KC. I don't know, it could be like, you know, it could be like in Quebec somewhere. It could be French Canadian for a while.
Okay.
He could have been seeing Starbucks and asking us about that movie. Anyways, he relays this very funny story that happens to him. I'm going to summarize it because it's a little bit wordy and I don't want to read the whole thing to you. Basically, he went to go see Thor. And I love the fact he points out he saw Thor in 3D with my dad and brother.
For his birthday.
On his birthday.
Happy birthday.
I love the fact that being seen Thor in 3D was the relevant to what happens here.
Why not?
So apparently there was this couple, and he said they're about 18, 19 years old, probably Vince Vaughn's children.
Right.
From a previous engagement, we'll say. Let's just say that they were physically engaged.
In a way.
In a way.
Yes.
With, let's just, okay, I think it's an easier way of saying it. In the Vince Vaughn world, she was helping him along with his donation. And, because they were in these, like, little recliner seats. That's the new fad now, is these
right.
leather
Everybody
recliners.
Everybody has to do the recliner seats now.
Which now makes me want to bring Purell whenever I go to the movie theaters.
It's true.
Because they're leather. You can just wipe those down.
Eh.
So apparently they did that. And then, it gets the guy was close to them, which I guess is really odd. You know, I understand being in the corner of the theater.
Right.
You
in
know.
The very back corner. That's where you do these things.
So then, but this is the best part. He goes, and a couple minutes later, they start arguing out loud, and the girl throws an entire tub of popcorn and a box of candy at the guy and takes off out of the theater with the guy right behind, which I find amazing.
Yeah.
I want to know
why.
What caused that argument?
What happened here?
Because a lot of things went through my head.
If this is you and you're listening to this show, please write us and tell us what happened.
So we want to know. What was the fight over? I mean, was it one of these things that... Was he going to sleep? I don't know. So anyways, this is his thing is this is the weirdest thing that has ever happened to him in a movie theater. It says, what's the craziest thing that ever happened to you in a theater that you guys were in? And then he continues to say, you are the best and keep up the good work. Thank you, Chris.
Thanks, Chris.
So what's the weirdest thing you've ever witnessed or experienced in a movie theater?
You know, I was trying to think that there have been a lot of strange things.
Yeah.
My personal favorite, though, is when we first moved to Columbus. And before I was on the press list, we used to go to the discount theater a lot, the one down by your house.
Mm. And, where the hookers and vampires go. Yeah,
pretty much. And we went pretty much every week. Like every Tuesday was cheap night and we were there every single week.
Yeah.
And there was a guy that we used to run into.
You went to the 50 cent night? Is that what it is?
Well, yeah.
Okay.
Every Tuesday night.
Well, might as well.
Why not? Well. So, and you know, it didn't matter what was playing. We'd just pick something. So, you know, it was Tuesday night. That's what we did. So anyway. We kept running into this guy who was there quite often. Mm. He was an older gentleman, white hair, and, you know, he looked quite normal until you looked down at his feet, and he was wearing stripper boots.
What?
That's yes.
awesome.
Like,
I was expecting he was a hobbit or something
like
that.
No, like thigh-high vinyl, like high-heeled stripper boots.
What else was he wearing?
Sometimes he was wearing, like, khakis.
Like just a regular
business
casual kind of
yeah.
thing? Yeah. That's amazing.
And he would show up in like, he had black ones and he had red ones.
Did he have facial hair?
And I don't
How'd you know
so.
It was a guy? Maybe it was
oh,
just
no,
a
it
very
was a guy
because
he
woman.
Was there with his wife and his wife had like an oxygen tank. And it was the strangest
Wouldn't
thing.
Would you?
Yes. And sometimes they came with another couple, and
That's
I was
amazing.
Like,
"Did the other couple wear boots?"
No, it was just him. And That's you'd amazing. Think if you were out with your friend who was in like nice khakis and like thigh high red stripper boots, that you know maybe you'd feel a little uncomfortable with it. Sometimes he'd like wear jean shorts with his stripper boots. It's just, but
like,
yeah,
always the stripper boots.
Though. Always the stripper boots.
Maybe those were his. Maybe that was like a genetic mutation, and those were just his. Real
I don't
feet.
Know. It was very strange.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I admire the man's commitment.
So every time we go back to that theater, you know, every once in a while we'll go. And I'm like, oh, I hope Stripper Boot Guy is here. And my husband's like, oh.
I've been to that theater. I've never seen Stripper Boot Guy.
I know. It was great.
I want to.
It was awesome.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's great. I don't have anything nearly as good. For once in my life, I don't have as nearly as awesome of a story.
Oh, really? Because you always have better stories than I do. That's
really, what's weird is my movie theater experiences have been pretty mundane as growing up. I've been to tons.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm just engrossed in the movies and not
We have a lot of fun stories as critics, though. Things that have happened at screenings.
Well, yeah, the stuff we usually relay those, like the big Red Dawn kerfuffle of 2012.
Right. There was one that I missed that one of the critics almost got in a fist fight. That was kind of cool.
The I Am Legend screening?
No, that was Welcome Home, Roscoe Jenkins.
Oh, yeah, I heard of that. I almost got in a fist fight during before the Alex Cross movie.
Nice.
The one with Tyler Perry playing
that one.
A terrible version of Alex Cross. And this guy was trying to take the press seats, and me and Nick Harum were like trying to fight him.
The I Am Legend story is kind of a legend.
Legend's amazing.
Yes. There were people who were fighting. Like, people actually, there was one seat left, and whoever was handling it actually had two people who were in the front of the theater because they hadn't counted correctly, and people were all hanging out, and they had them race to the seat. And whoever got to the seat first, they got to stay.
And the thing is, here's the thing. The seat was in the middle, so they raced over people.
Way on the top, like in the middle of the row.
And this was not like Bugs Bunny going, excuse me. No, they just like plowed over people.
But see, what is even better?
It was like one of those tragic speedboat accidents you see at SeaWorld every now and then.
But what's even better is that 5 minutes before the screening started, a member of the press showed up and they threw the guy out of his seat.
And insisted.
Yeah.
Which was such a...
Oh, it was terrible.
Know, jerk move.
Yeah.
The only thing that I've experienced, there was one press screening, I don't think I've told this one on the radio. It was for Miracle, the hockey movie. With Kurt Russell. And if you recall, that movie's like 2.5 hours long. It's a long movie. It's a great movie, but it's a long film. And it was in the middle of a snowstorm, so I busted my hind coming over to get to the theater. And it was in a weird theater. It was at the one out in Hilliard on West Point, which is, it's a theater they almost never do screenings at.
Until now. They're all the time. But
But so I was there, and it was the middle of a snowstorm, and the bulb blows in the middle of like 10 minutes in. And so they turn it off, and they have to fix it. Now, this is in the infancy of cellular phones, so of camera phones, so they wouldn't allow anyone to take out their phone and make a call. And people are like, no, this is a 2.5 hour. I got to call the babysitter. I got to call my husband. Tell him, because they're delaying it. And I mean, the security was crazy. They were yelling at people. I mean, just like screaming at them. And I'm like, you're here to protect the film's not even running through the projector. The bulb is broken. There is nothing to pirate at this point.
Right.
It was insane. So yeah, I've seen crazy security.
Yeah.
Security guards.
Oh, yeah. Crazy security guard stories. We can go on all day.
But
we should probably move on.
We should move on. So those are the craziest stories. I have not yet had the experience that Chris from Kansas City has. So.
No.
Well, I haven't witnessed that.
Nice.
You know what I mean. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Anyways, let's talk box office real quick. I said $30 million for The Best Man Holiday. You said $50 million for Thor.
You had the right number. I had the right movie.
That's right. Thor came in with $37 million, which isn't bad for what it is. And Best Man Holiday surprised at I don't know why it surprised, because it was going to make tons of money. If you were surprised by the performance of The Best Man Holiday, you're a racist. I'm sorry. No, I don't know about that.
Okay.
I'm just like wanting to upset people now. No, it did very well. It kind of filled a void, and it was an unopposed weekend, really. And Thor didn't hold as strongly as it could have, but it's still doing extremely well.
Yes.
Anyways, it's going down, blip, 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 blip. And the only thing that to mention is Charlie Countryman, which we talked about last week, came in at 69th with just under $8,000 in 15 theaters. Not too good, Charlie. Sorry, Shia.
For good reason.
All right, so what's your prediction this week? I actually have a number written down.
Oh, you do?
So I want to hear what yours is.
Oh, well, I'm going to say Catching Fire, of course.
Of course.
Yeah. I'm going to give it 155.
Wow! Wow, that's a lot.
They are shooting for, like, well over that.
It's not going to make Avengers numbers, I don't think. I don't even think it's going to make Iron Man 3 numbers. I'm saying 102 million.
Okay.
I just did a nice round, 102 million. It'll definitely be 100 million or more.
The last one made 141 in its first weekend. Oh, no, that was the last. No, it was the last one. I don't know. It was comparing between that one and the last Twilight movie.
Yeah. Anyways, it's going to make tons of money this
Yes,
weekend.
It is.
But, you know, oh gosh, we only have about a minute. And we need to quickly race through the world famous
DVD roundup.
Yeah.
Woo!
Here we go. The first one, the big one, is The World's End.
Yes.
Which is the Simon Pegg.
Edgar Wright.
Edgar Wright movie about pub crawls and alien invasions. And you can get it in the Cornetto Trilogy, a three movie set with along with Hot Fuzz.
This
and
is the
Shaun of the Dead.
This is the weakest of the trilogy, but it's still a good movie.
It's a great deal for all three.
Yes,
if you don't have it in Blu-ray, and they're the Blu-rays from that they've released, so it has all the special features.
Cool.
On them. There's also Were the Millers, which was a fine, funny movie. There's also Two Guns, which wasn't, but you get to see Paula Patton naked.
It was kind of fun anyway.
Yeah. Paranoia is out too, which is its biggest sin is it's just so fiercely mediocre you forget about it. Stars Liam Hemsworth, the Frank Stallone of today.
Yes.
There's also The To-Do List, which you saw.
Yeah.
You enjoyed it too.
It's okay. Yeah, it's kind of funny.
For the kids, you've got Planes. For the horror fans, Night of the Comet, Blu-ray. And you've got Star Trek The Next Generation Season 5. The one I'm giving a stinker is Beach Babes from Beyond from 1993, starring Joe Estevez, Don Swayze, Joey Travolta,
yeah.
Excuse me.
Yeah, no.
And Burt Ward. Robin's Burt Ward.
And why not?
Yes. Anyways, we're out of time.
See ya.